Okay, thank you so much for being here. So excited to have you guys. Some of you have come a long, long way. Appreciate that very much. It's good to see you, Carlo. About 70% of the words that I read, aside from scripture and aside from Bible study and for sermon preparation, those kinds of things, aside from that, about 70% of the words that I read are secular words. In other words, it's in a magazine, it's a book on leadership, it's something that some CEO wrote. And it's not that I don't think there's good leadership in the body of Christ. I think there is. But I think there's a whole lot to learn from other places. And I think oftentimes the body of Christ is, there are some great leaders in the body of Christ. Don't get me wrong. And there's some great leadership stuff in the body of Christ. My master's degree is in leadership. And your doctorate degree is in leadership. Dr. Crowther's doctorate degree is against a Christian perspective of leadership. I just think there's a lot to be gained from understanding leadership from different perspectives. And maybe it's just me, and maybe this will be an exercise in futility, but my idea for this time together was for us to learn about leadership from the lives of some very successful people, which means there's going to be a little bit of work on us to extrapolate and to draw out some lessons that God might be speaking to us. One of the things I've taken to doing in these last few years is whenever I do a mentoring group, when we have a campaign, we call it, or a sermon, small group sermon series, I always build my small group with people who are successful business people. And it's not that I just want to be around business people, it's not that I want to be around successful people, but I do want to be around successful business people. Because these people who are in, they're believers, they're in the game, they're doing it the right way, but they got where they have gotten because of the practice of some leadership principles that are transferable to me in my world. Does that make sense? Does that sound selfish? So I have some relationships that are mutual mentoring type relationships. And one of those is with this guy right here. Mac's a good friend of mine. And I hope when we get together regularly, we have a routine, place. We meet, there's no question about what time or what place. It's just the wins. And since Caitlin runs my life and a little bit of yours, we get together on a regular basis, and it always winds up in him asking something from me to speak into his world. But I try to make sure the preponderance, a little selfishly, of what we discuss is for me to delve into his world. I have learned so much from this guy. And so there are four of them, and I'm going to introduce them to you one at a time as they come, and we're going to let them talk and share their story for 30 to 45 minutes. Now listen, I told them this is not a time to be humble. In other words, I don't want you to deflect and all of that. I want you to tell, don't be proud, but I want you to tell the story. And I want you to be clear on what your goals are and where you're headed and how you've gotten here so far and the obstacles you've faced and how you've overcome those kinds of things. Environments that they had their success in. And so I've asked them to do that. They're going to talk 30 to 45 minutes. Then there are going to be some questions, and I may ask some of those questions. I may push a little deeper because I know some of their, not know some of their, I know their stories. And so I may press a little bit deeper. And then I'd like you to write down some notes as they talk and listen to what they say. Then, as you came in, you were handed a schedule. And that schedule is more than a schedule. Don't throw it away. It's got your group number on it. So your group number is highlighted. And then when they're finished talking, and the question and answer period is over, which will be about 1 hour, then you're going to go aside into your group and discuss what you heard and with other people. You may have heard the same things. You probably will not have heard the same things. And then you're going to extrapolate those truths out of their scenario and try to apply it to your scenario. Then we're going to come back and we're going to report back on the board. You're going to bring the board that you have in your room back in here. You're going to report back and say, this is what we heard. This is what we gained. So many of the things that I would consider innovations that we have done here did not start, don't judge me, they did not start in a Christian context. It was not developed in my brain in a Christian context, but it had an expression in a Christian context. So I hope that this can be helpful to you. I know it will. So Mac McLam is the owner of Carly C's. It's the largest, correct me, it's the largest family-owned food store chain in North Carolina.
That might be true. I'm not sure, but it probably, that might be true.
It's up there.
Yeah.
Okay. So Mac is not just that's not his only business. He's an entrepreneur. He's got his hands in a bunch of other things. Without any further ado, Mac, come on up here and take this microphone. Let's make Mac feel welcome.
All right. If y'all don't mind, I'd like to start with a prayer, just briefly. So, Father, I just ask for your presence and your spirit at this moment, at this time, O Lord, that the words would be pleasing unto you, that the heart would be poured out, and that blessings would take place. We love you and praise you, Lord. Amen. Maybe I'll kind of give you a little bit of my background about speaking. There was a time my greatest fear, speaking in front of people. In fact, I told people, I says, when I went to the funeral of someone, I thought the guy in the box was better off than the guy that was giving the eulogy. My fear of speaking was greater than my fear of death. I didn't fear dying, but in fact, when I was in high school, my friends tried to get me to run for class president. And I said, no, I'm not going to get up there and speak in front of the student body. And so they went to the teachers, and the teachers agreed that if I'd run, I would not have to speak in front of the student body. And so I agreed, and I ran. I ended up losing by about 2 votes to one of my best friends, another girl. This is my senior year. And I didn't find out until afterwards, after I lost, that my friends had lied to me. They actually didn't go to the teachers and got me not to have to speak. They just lied to me so they could get me to run. And I was thinking, Lord, thank you for allowing me to lose. And now every 5 years, she's responsible for getting together the reunion. God just continues to bless me every 5 years and on and on. And so I'm so grateful for that. But Michael asked me to speak about, you know, about success and about how I felt like what caused it and what prompted it. And in my life, there's been several experiences and several overriding principles. Most of them are based out of a scripture somewhere. The biggest one is the about the favor of God. My grandfather was a very spiritual man, very praying man. When you speak to people, they would talk about it and that type of thing, that he would never respond immediately. He'd always say, let me pray about it. He was a very gentle man, you know. And me and all of my cousins, we recognize, says that a good man leaves an inheritance for his children's children. And so we actually walk in that. You know, and I told my wife earlier today, I says, you know, I'm so grateful that I see my grandchildren and I want them to walk in the blessing and the inheritance. And it's not about money. It's much deeper than that. And so I've always recognized the favor of God. And it's been explicable. You know, I had a pastor one time who talks about being God's favorite kid all the time. Okay, yeah, says that all the time, you know. And I was in service, and I'd heard it many times about being God's favorite kid. And so I was at home one day, and I was praying about this. And I said, okay, God, I want to be your favorite. Now, I didn't begrudge my pastor thinking he was a favorite, but I thought, okay, God, I want to be your favorite. What does that look like? And God spoke to me and says, which one of your children is your favorite? And I have 2 children. I have a son and a daughter. They're 20 months apart. And I was like, oh, God, how do I choose between my son and my daughter about which one is my favorite? And God says, no, Mac, quit telling me what you think I want to hear and tell me. Which one of your children is your favorite? And so I go through this gut-wrenching process of choosing between my children, which one is my favorite. Okay? And I finally said, God, it changes. He says, what do you mean it changes? I said, to be honest with you, sometimes Zach's my favorite, sometimes Ariel's my favorite. And he says, why is that? I says, well, sometimes, you know, they just share with you. They want to be a part of you. Sometimes they're in their own world. They want to go do their own thing and all that kind of stuff and get to share in it and that type of thing. And God spoke to me. He says, and it's the same with me. He says, really, I don't choose my favorites. They choose me. Okay? So when I recognized that when I started to look throughout all of the relationships that I have, if you think about families and stuff like that, typically if there's a favorite involved, whoever is considered the favorite typically has more investment in the person that they're favorite with. Okay? So if you typically, if you have a relationship where even in the business world, where somebody thinks that somebody is treated favorably, typically that's because that person has more invested in the person above them. And so we begin to be God's favorite because we choose to be. We choose to spend time with him. We choose to be. He gets to be a part of our lives and everything. I never forget when I was trying to explain this to my daughter. She was in her upper teens, and I was talking about favor and stuff, and she wasn't quite getting it, you know. And so we had a situation at that time where we were three meat cutters short in our company, which is pretty tough because meat cutters are hard to find. And so I happened one morning, and I thought, you know, should have done this to begin with, but I didn't. But I'm like, you know, God, I'm praying this morning. I'm thinking, you know, Lord, if it be your will, I really could use another meat cutter type thing. Didn't think anything about it. I get in the car. I say I think about it. I prayed in. I was on my way to work. And while I was on the way to work, I got to talking to a friend on the telephone. And he had had a friend who had committed suicide. And we were talking about it and so forth and anything about it. And I pulled into the driveway at work. And I said, well, John, I got to go. I says, and he says, oh, Mike, one more thing. He says, I've got a guy who just quit his job with the insurance thing that cuts meat. And he's wanting to get back into it. Could you use it? I'm like, you have got to be kidding me, man. I mean, this is like within an hour. You know, we've been eating a meat cutter for weeks. And this is within an hour, you know. And I was telling my daughter about this, and, you know, she's like, Daddy, that's just coincidence. So a couple of days later, I'm still two meat cutters short. So I says, God, you know, if it be okay, you know, I says, you know, if it be your will, you know, because I realize if it's not his will, there's a reason why we need to be short. That's a tough lesson, okay? So I said, but God, if it be okay, I says, I really could use another meat cutter. And this particular day, I had to take my daughter to the doctor. She was not feeling all that well. So I went, and we were waiting in the living room, and or not the living room, the waiting room for it, and sitting there and stuff. And in a minute, my meat director calls me. He says, Mac, he says, the Lord has sent us another one. I says, what do you mean? He says, I just got another meat cutter that applies. He's got all this experience, that type of thing, and says, you know, he's going to be able to start sometime this coming Monday. And I thought, well, that was just this morning, that type of thing. And so I was telling Ariel, she says, what's going on? And I said, well, that was Scott telling me that that the Lord had sent us another meat cutter. She says, what do you mean? I says, well, this morning I was praying for another meat cutter. I says, and he was calling to let me know. He says, you told Scott that you were praying for another meat cutter? I says, no, I didn't tell him that. He says, well, why did he say that the Lord gave you another one? I said, well, that was God's way of telling me that he had fulfilled my prayer. Scott just happened to be a part of it. He didn't even realize what he was saying, that type of thing. And so she's still shaking her head like, that type of thing. And so we end up taking a trip to New York. And so I'm trying to point out the favor to her. I realized during this process that I never recognized God's favor as much. You know, I'm on the scope now. And I recognize God's favor now. And so we take this trip to New York, and one thing after another, miraculously, just happened. She's wanting to go to FIT, the Fashion Institute of Technology in New York. We actually get on the plane, and she's worried about what we're doing. And while we're on the plane, we actually met a friend of yours, Lewis, Ron Lewis, on the plane, and find out that has a church down in there that he preaches at every week. And so we get there, and we find out, okay, now we got you a church, okay? And so we get down there, and I'm at a show, and while we were there, I'm at an SMR, it's a food show, that type thing. And while I'm there, you know, we get to talking to this guy that's running the show's wife, and she has a connection at FIT, you know, that type thing. And she's going to take us down to see it. And my daughter's just like, now she's beginning to see the things. And the thing that kicked her for it's kind of so funny is that we're walking down the streets of New York, and it starts pouring rain, okay? And we would go sit under the ledges while it quit raining, and we'd get back out, and we'd start walking. And all of a sudden, a guy comes running out of one of the hotels, hands us an umbrella, and says, "Here, you guys need this." And my daughter looks at me, and she says, "Now that is favor there." Okay. Okay. So, you know, I recognize as our company and our business that we have favor, okay? And because we have favor, we're able to do things and ask for things that other people would never even attempt to. I want to share Stephen. So does anybody know who J. Hudson Taylor is? Well, tell us.
Missionary to China.
Missionary to China. Okay. You know why I'm asking you that? Because I didn't know. Okay. For real. I did not know. What happens is I have this statement on my table from J. Hudson Taylor, who said, "Many Christians estimate the difficulties in light of their own resources and thus attempt little and often fail in little that they attempt. All God's giants were weak men who did great things for God because they reckoned on his power and presence with them." Okay. This is on a table in my office and everything, and I read it currently. And I didn't even know who he was, okay, that type thing. But the words spoke to me in my spirit and so forth that it's not really about me, it's about him. I don't have to make it. I don't have to depend on what I can do and that type of thing, that I recognize that. You know, when I talk about goals, my goal saying is that early on, most of my goals were surrounded around my father and so forth. And one of those goals was that I was hoping that we could always be a $100 million company. I knew at $100 million it would work well, things would do well, and that type of thing. And I remember this was back in, I don't remember, it might have been 99 or something. And it was obvious that we were going to surpass that goal that year. And I was at home, and I was just being grateful and thinking, you know, "God, I'm just so grateful. You've blessed us so tremendously. We've always had your favor," and that type of thing and so forth. And I remember God speaking to me. He said, "That won't my number." And I'm like, "What you mean that won't your number?" And I says, "But you know, God, I've been working towards this for years. And he says, "Yeah, that won't my number." And I said, "Well, God, what was your number?" He says, "My number was $1 billion. And I was like, "Whoa." And I said, "Well, God, I don't understand. Why have you not told me before now about this?" Okay. And he says, "Because you were not prepared to handle it." And I says, "And God, I don't think I'm still prepared to handle that." Okay. And so, you know, and there's times when I think about that it's not my number, it's his number. Okay. He's the one that makes it happen. We've just got to have the courage to walk through the steps, regardless of what it looks like, to step through to go into those places where we need to go. And it's not always going to make sense. I remember one time when I was whining to God one morning or one afternoon praying and so forth, because I was a little bit frustrated because I didn't understand what was happening. You know, things seemed to be awry. I was a little bit frustrated. And I was saying, "God, I don't understand what we're doing. I don't understand why we're doing it. I says, I don't understand where we're going. I just need for you to tell me what we're doing and why we're doing it and where we're headed and that type of thing." And I remember he spoke so clearly. He says, "You mean like Thomas?" Gosh, that hurt. Woo. And, you know, and I realized at that moment, and I thought, "Okay, God, I get it. I get it. Okay. No, God, I don't have to know. And in fact, I don't even want to know unless you want me to know." Okay. So not everything that we do makes sense in the natural. Sometimes that it just doesn't make sense. And I'm like, and I'll get to this a little bit. You know, I kind of have a motto that I don't care. Okay. And I say it about many things is that sometimes you're going to make decisions that not everybody's going to agree with and not everybody's going to like. And sometimes you make a decision one time this way, and the next time you make it a different way when the circumstances in the natural look like they're the same, but in the spiritual they're not. And not everybody in the natural understands that. And so, but I've reached a point where I don't care, okay? I don't care what you think about me. I care about you, but I don't care what you think about me. And that's not always been easy. The other thing is about that I feel like that one of our successes to men is that when we're in the fire, how do we respond and what do we look like? There's a verse in Malachi 3:3 that says, he was sent as a refiner and a purifier of silver. And the analogy is that we're the silver. Okay? And if you ever go to the blacksmith, or silversmith, I guess is what they call them, and talk about that, is that the silversmith puts the silver in the hottest part of the fire in order to burn the imperfections off. Okay? So he can't put it on the edges or anything like that. He has to put it right in the center of the fire where it's the hottest to burn it off. And during the whole time that he's there, he has to keep his eyes on it, and he has to keep his hands on it. Okay? Because if he takes his eyes off of it, it might burn up and go away. And if he doesn't keep his hands on it and drop it, he may get it to a part of the fire. And that silversmith leaves it in the hottest part of the fire until the imperfections are burned off. And if you ask the silversmith, well, how do you know when all the imperfections are burned off? He'll tell you, when I can see my image in it. Okay? So when we think about being in the fire, if we don't like the heat, we just got to be start to look like God in it. Okay? So when God begins to see himself in us in the middle of the fire, we don't really have to be in the middle of the fire. Doesn't mean the circumstances don't change. Okay? Circumstances may be the same, but we don't necessarily have to be in the fire. I use an example is that I went to the doctor one time. I probably had my life saved by a pulled groin muscle. Okay. I told my daughter that this week. She pulled a groin muscle 2 weeks ago, and she was talking about it. And I said, well, honey, a pulled groin muscle saved my life. She said, what are you talking about? And what happened was I went to the doctor with a hurt in my side. He referred me to a urologist. I went to the urologist, never seen this guy before in my life. And he got to check him out and everything. He says, Mac, he says, you've pulled a groin muscle. I said, do what? He says, yeah, you've pulled a groin muscle, and it's just going all the way up to your side. There, he says, and it's just going to take time to heal. And I said, okay, well, I appreciate it. And I started to grab my stuff and leave out there. He told me, this is the words he said. I've never met this guy before. He says, but God probably sent you to me to tell you you need to have that spot on your back looked at. And so I did. I didn't think anything about it. I went to the doctor, and he looked at it and said, yeah, I don't think there's anything wrong. He said, but we'll cut that thing out of there, and we'll go on. And he says, I'll call you. He said, call back on Thursday, and I'll give you the results. I said, okay. I didn't think anything about it. I had a meeting down at the beach, business meeting in Disney, and I forgot to call. I'm really worried about it, I guess. Forgot to call, okay? But I got sick Thursday night. I don't very rarely get sick, but I got sick Thursday night, and Friday morning I called Zayda and I said, honey, I'm coming home. I said, if I'm going to be sick, I'm going to be sick at home. I'm not going to be sick up here at the beach. She says, okay, well, that's fine. So I get in the car. When I get in the car, I thought, you know, gosh, I forgot to call yesterday about the results. So I called the guy, or called the office there and told her, I says, this is Carly McLean. I says, and I was calling about my results from a testing. She says, McLean? I said, yes. She says, Carly? I said, yes. She said, let me get the doctor. I thought, well, that don't sound good. So doctor comes on and everything, and I'm riding down the road. I'm by myself, and doctor says, well, Mac, he says, you got melanoma. He says, and we're going to need to take care of this. He says, we ain't got to take care of it today or tomorrow, but we don't need to let this go. He said, we need to handle it. We need to either go to Duke or to Chapel Hill, that type of thing. I says, okay. So I'm riding in that car, I'm in the fire. Okay, my world is kind of shook. I'm a little bit rocked, and I'm trying to think, God, I don't understand this. You know, I know that I have your favor. I know that I have your blessing. You continue to bless me, all of those kinds of things, and so forth. And God began to show me other times in my life where it had been extremely stressful, extremely where I could see myself there on the sofa crying my eyes out over something, over different events and so forth like that. And I could see myself going through all these emotional times. And God spoke to me and says, if you really trust me. And I thought, okay, you got it. I ain't worried about it. And God spoke to me just that fast, and he says, I got you back. And I thought, what does that mean? Does that mean he's healed my back or I got you back? You know, it didn't take me about 30 seconds to start, you know, doubting it, that type of thing. And I thought, no, God, okay, it doesn't matter. If it's my time to go, I'm okay. And whatever you do, that type of thing. This was one of the what should have been one of the most trying circumstances events in my life was one of the most peaceful, rewarding experiences I've ever known. In fact, there was a few weeks down the road or something that my best friend called me. I was at work. And he says, Mac, he was looking at insurance about whether I'd ever be able to get insurance or not. And I wasn't real concerned about it. He says, what stage was your cancer? I says, I don't know. He says, excuse me? I says, I don't know. Never asked. Didn't matter. And you could tell he was a little puzzled about that. And I was like, I just don't care. Don't care to know. It don't really matter. You know, it's not my deal. It's his deal. Hey, listen, that was a 05. I still don't know. Never checked it, never called. In fact, when I got off the phone with him, I thought, Mac, you know, you kind of look stupid. Somebody asks you about what stage and you can't answer. And so I started to type on the internet melanoma and everything, and I remember God speaking to me. He said, what are you doing? And I thought, I'm sorry, God. I turned it back off. I never did search it. Don't really know what it looks like or anything like that. And so that's just being in the fire and recognizing that he has you there can be all turned around, but the peace of God can still be there. And so in business, we have many things that happen like that as well. It just doesn't happen in a personal life. I can remember when we had Walmart come to town. Now, see, in our industry, Walmart is Goliath. Okay. And Goliath's whole family. Okay. That's Walmart. Okay. And they announced in our thing that they were going to build these stores, and two of these was right next door to us. Okay. I mean, one of them was right across the street. There was just a road that separated us. I mean, so it couldn't have been more than 40 yards from their parking lot to our parking lot. And the other one was as close as they could get and everything. And I could tell my staff was really anxious, you know. And I'm crying, praying about this thing. And I'm like, you know, God. And God's like, you focus on you. Don't you worry about them. You focus on you, what you're called to do, that type of thing. And I'm like, but God, man, that's just, I said, it's like they're targeting us. And he's like, well, how close do you think David had to get to Goliath to sling a shot at him? And I thought, probably not much further than they're building this store across the street from us. It's not about them. It's about us. It's about what we do. It's about what our calling is. And I spoke earlier about decisions and so forth like this. One of the principles that I recognize in our business is that is about vindication. We can't vindicate ourselves when people view that we've done something wrong. When we do, we're trying to be God. Okay. When we do the right thing, whether everybody believes it's the right thing or not, if we do the wrong thing, we try to make amends as quickly as possible. When we do the right vacation in his time, and that's not always easy. When you know people are judging you and all those kinds of things and so forth like that. And sometimes when you make decisions, you know, my CFO, who I found out after I hired him, not before, is my cousin. I found out after I hired him that we went back chasing Lynch. He was a McLean, but I didn't realize he was kin to me after a while. But when I first started to interview him to be my CFO, okay, I'd prayed about this and asked my people about it, is that he was in federal prison in Petersburg, St. Petersburg or Petersburg, something like that, when I was trying to first make the appointment to interview with him. He was in federal prison for federal withholding crime, and so he speaks about it and stuff now. Okay, now I don't know, but you start telling your people that you're going to hire a convict to be your CFO, and it can, you know, it can challenge you. It can really challenge you, you know. And if you haven't built up a lot of trust with your staff, that type of thing, it can be a really thing because, you know, and you recognize, okay, God, you know, we're spending a lot of capital on this, you know, but I don't care. I really don't. If that's what he wants, I don't care. In fact, it was his idea. In fact, I called my bankers before I did, and I told them what I was planning to do. And I called my banker. I says, I'm planning to hire this guy. I says, and he probably will end up being our CFO. Is that going to be a problem? You know, and all of them said, oh, no, this is not going to be. Mac, he says, in my quiet time this morning when I was praying, I don't normally do stuff like this. He said, but God told me to tell you, you need to go ahead and talk to that guy. Banker. Yeah. And it was kind of amazing because I ended up hiring him. And about a year and a half later, our biggest lender that was dealing with us developed a problem around it. Now, I'd sought approval, all that kind of stuff. And a year and a half down the road, they had a problem with it. Says, you know, we got a problem. I said, well, no, wait a minute, gang. I says, I kind of got this screen before we ever done this. Yeah, I know, but we kind of have a problem with it now. And I says, and they were our biggest lender, probably had 80% of our loans. And I says, I'm not letting him go. And they said, well, you know, we got a problem. I said, I don't care. I says, he's not done anything even remotely for me to consider letting him go. I says, I'm not going to do it. They said, well, you're going to have to move those loans. I says, well, that's what we're going to have to do because I don't care. I didn't tell them that, but I don't. Now, if God had told me to let him go, I would have. Okay. Now, this is just how good God is. We ended up moving the loan. We developed a new relationship with a new bank and ended up getting the loans and saving about 40-something basis points off of the loans. And it saved us about almost $100,000 a year, I mean, in the interest. That's just, I don't know. So I just, you know, don't care. One of the things about success also that, now listen, I don't have a time around here, Ma.
You're good.
Okay. Well, you're going to have to, yeah.
I got you.
Well, I understand that, but I don't want to get to your time.
You got some good stuff you don't want to leave out.
That's right. What time is it?
Okay,
all right. So one in the business was overcoming the guilt of making money. Okay, I enjoy making money. It was a thing with me. It's a way we kept score, that type thing about what we're doing, you know. And when we talk about our company, you know, today, and I would talk about it a little bit, our primary purpose as a company is love, bless, and serve the communities that we're in. That's our primary purpose. Our primary purpose is not about making money. Now, I tell them, I said, I don't want none of y'all to get deceived. I says, if we don't make money, we're not going to love, bless, or serve anybody because we're not going to be here. Okay, so we have an expectation about making money, but I had to overcome the thing about making, the enemy would constantly prod me about making money. I enjoyed working, which a lot of men do, okay? And I enjoyed working, making money, find new ways to do it better and make more money, be more efficient, and that type of thing. And the enemy would always say, oh, you love making money, you love making money, you love making money. And I was at church one day, and I just walked in, and I remember God saying, I'm fed up with this. I'm like, what do you mean? Because I had that spirit come on me again. Oh, you were late getting here because you couldn't leave making money. You know, you love making money more than you love God. And I got in there, and God spoke to me, and he says, enough of this. He says, if your love of money was greater than your love of me, you wouldn't tithe. Okay. And I dealt with that for years, and it was solved. I never went back down that path or any of that type of thing. And so I began to recognize my role in the kingdom, okay, and so forth, and that what our role of the company was and so forth. And that was one of the things. One of the things that I always believe that is key to success in most business is the processes. Okay. The process is, you know, when something goes wrong, why did the process fail? Do we have a process? Does it work? Does the process need to be tweaked? Does it need to be changed? I don't know whether y'all are familiar with Sheetz, very prominent change or a prominent convenience store chain and so forth. I had a wise man tell me one time, he says, "Mac, just always remember, ultimately all strategies fail." Okay, and I thought, he says, I remember talking to Randy Sheets. He says, when they were debating about whether to file bankruptcy or not, he says, and their change into what they have today was not out of inspiration, it was out of desperation. Okay. So, you know, and so those type things is we recognize that we have to be ever evolving. And, you know, I'm in the business of selling groceries primarily. And I know Michael's in the, for lack of a better word, please don't take it, in the church business. And so many times I sit in the church and he's talking about something about church and God will say to me, are you listening? Okay. So I'll never forget, he had a sermon that hadn't been coming long. He had the sermon where he had a reporter to ask him about, did he ever envision having a 5,000 member church? And he said, he told me, he said, I'm going to be arrogant, but yeah, I remember having it. He says, in fact, I remember when we got to 400 or 500 members, he says, I thought, you know, God, I'm real concerned about whether we can get over this plateau because so many churches stop at the 500 mark. He says, and God spoke to him and said, well, what would your church look like if you had 5,000 members? And he started laying out the staff, how many pastors it have and all that kind of stuff. And he was talking about that, and God spoke to me and says, are you listening? Okay, I got it, God. I got it. So we went back and thought, okay, what positions are we going to have at $1 billion? How many supervisors? How many district managers? And we actually have the chart laid out for all of them and that type thing. And so this week I had a discussion because my accounting people hired someone. And I says, that position is not on the chart. Well, well, you need to make me a new chart. You got 17 people. When we get to $1 billion, you tell me what the titles are going to be for those 17 people, that type of thing. Because let's change it. Let's just don't do it haphazardly. Those type of things. My primary role with the company coming through was to serve my father. Okay. Now, my dad, Charlie C. Sr., who is the namesake of our company and everything, was my best friend, my mentor, that type of thing. He passed here in June of 15. And all of my goals working for him or working with him were surrounded around him. It was never around me. You know, I remember my dad wanted to be a millionaire by the time he was 50. I remember when he told me that, I want to be a millionaire by the time I was 50. I had to be pretty young then. And my goal was that he'd make $1 million every year. Yeah. And it is. And so everything that I did surrounding him, I'll never forget, as we got through the later years, my dad started letting me have more of the company when we opened up new stores and everything. And we would share voting powers. He'd have 50% and I'd have 50%. My mother questioned me about that one time. She says, what happens when y'all don't agree? I says, it really doesn't matter. She says, what you mean? I says, if we don't agree, I'm going to try to explain to Daddy why I think we should do what we need to do. He's going to listen or not listen. And if he decides something differently, that's what we're going to do. Doesn't matter about what the votes or anything like that is. So I always understood the concept, even from an early age, of the respect for authority. Okay. Not only with my father, but with everyone, with my teachers, my pastors, that type of thing. I always understand the principle of respect for authority in that if you don't have respect for authority, you can't be put in a place of authority. Okay? Because essentially, if you can't respect authority, you have no way to expect people to respect your experience and that type of thing. And so I've always had that. You know, I remember one of my roles today is that my father's gone, and even though I served my father, that type of thing, I always recognized that the Lord was my source. So I served my father, and I realized that the Lord was my source, not my parents, who I worked for and that type of thing. That was never my source. God, the Lord was my source, and I always depended on that and recognized that and so forth. And you know, as my father passed and we continue to go on, one of the challenges that I had as a leader of the company is trying to say, okay, how do we maintain who we are and what we are as we grow and we come bigger and my parents are gone or not active in the business? And I remember not long after my father died, I was talking to my mother. My mother asked, she says, is there anything of your father's that you want? And I says, well, you know, I says, not really. I says, anything. I says, I wouldn't mind having his watch. And she says, well, Mike, why would you want his watch? You got a watch. And your son, my son, who's Carly C. McClam III, he has a watch. We bought him when he graduated from high school. And I said, well, you know, my grandson, who's Carly C. McClam IV, we affectionately call him as Wyatt. He's 3, just started T-ball. And I said, well, Mama, I says, I figured if Wyatt, you know, goes to college and graduates from college, I'd love to give him Daddy's watch. And, you know, my mama looked at me. She says, Matt, she says, Wyatt's not going to know who your daddy is. I thought, oh, hell yeah, he is. Oh, yeah. That's still part of my role, okay? And it's not only him. It's the people who work for us to recognize, hey, who he is and what it is because it's so much about who our culture is. It's so much about the way we speak and the way we talk. Every year, I meet with every single employee. I actually give every one of them a business card, okay, with my cell phone and my numbers and emails on it and everything. So I got 1,800 people out there, employees. Now I tell them, I say, when you want to raise it, don't call me. But anyway, but we have meetings with employees, and part of it is about expectations and trying to make expectations clear. You know? I actually happen to believe that the number one reasons that relationships fail is because of unmet expectations, and probably the number one reason that expectations are not met is they're not clear. And so we meet with everyone to try to see, hey, what does that do? And when we talk about our primary purpose, you know, I go back to my parents when they were in the grocery business. My dad operated the meat department, handled groceries. My mother handled the front, run the front. And she shares the story with me. She says when we were operating, this was their second store. They got kicked out of their first store or sold it. They were in their second store. And she says, yeah, I used to go every afternoon to work at the mill. And I says, well, why'd you do that, Mama? She says, well, we didn't have enough money to live off of. I was like, we operated in a grocery store. She says, yeah, but back then you had farmers. She says, and they couldn't pay their bills but twice a year, and we didn't have enough money to carry them. So I went and worked at the mill, and that's what we paid the light bill and the foods and all that kind of stuff. I was like, wow. So she says, it took us almost 3 years before I could go to work full-time in the store. She says, we had made enough money that we could carry the people and that type of thing. She says, I hadn't been there but a month. She says, when the owner of the business said that he had changed his mind and wanted us to get out in 30 days. And she says, and I just quit for a month. And she says, we were just devastated and rocked in the fire, I'm sure. My dad, the fire, from the outside, never seemed to bother him much from my position. But I'm sure this did, but the notice moved to 90 days. In the meantime, he went across the street and built a lot and started building a store. Okay? 60 days later, he opens up the store. 60 days. You can't get a permit today in 60 days. Okay? He opened up the store in 60 days. And I was like, Danny, I said, how are you doing? He said, well, Mike, there was a time there where if you bought dog food, you had to buy it from this store. And if you bought something else, you bought it from this store because we were in the process of moving it. I said, well, how'd you get all that stuff moved? He said, well, you know, when we got ready to move, he says, all the farmers in the communities brought their 2-ton trucks and their laborers and helped field laborers and everything. He says, and they come and walked down the aisles and helped us put in banana boxes and loaded it up on the trucks and hauled it off across the store, went down the aisles, unloaded the boxes, and started putting it on the shelves. I'm like, are you serious? He says, yeah, Mike. He says, I never took the money. I had the cash register. I says, what do you mean? He said, well, I went to the old store. I unplugged cash register, put it in the front seat of my truck, drove it over to the old store, put it on the new cash register, and plugged it back in. And we just went back to selling groceries. You know, and I'm thinking, okay, now how do I make sure, what would possess a community to do that? You know, and as I began to ponder that and so forth like that, I thought, okay, how do I capture that, God? How do I do that? And then it dawned on me, and I thought, well, gosh, really what my parents did was love. See, my parents knew everybody. They knew them by name. They served them. They tried to get what they wanted and all those kinds of things and so forth. And really what they did is they demonstrated love to the community. So when they got in a time of need, the community didn't know anything to do but love them back. Now, my parents would have never used the word love. Okay. Yeah. Great customer service, getting them one of them, all that kind of stuff. And so that became our primary purpose. That became what we were about. Okay. And we talked about, and what I did is I started going to every store. I went to the very first store, and we used to meet in the back room, and we'd talk about, okay, what does love look like in a grocery store? And I actually had them break up into groups, and like you had the cashiers and the bag boys and the meat cutters and the deli baker people, and I said, y'all make a list about what love looks like in a grocery store, and we're going to come back, and we're going to talk about it. And so then I had a white board. It wasn't like this. It was paper. I had a white board, and I says, okay, we're going to talk about what love looks like. And so I went to the very first group. I'll never forget this. Changed my life. Very first group was cashiers. I looked at the girl and I says, what does love look like as a cashier? She says, we need to give undivided attention. I says, oh, that's great. So I had the girl, she started writing up undivided attention. And as soon as she started writing, God spoke to me and says, you don't know how to love. I'm like, what do you mean I don't know how to love? He's like, read it. And she was writing it up on the board. And about that time, it just pierced my heart. And I thought, wow, man, I don't give anybody undivided attention. See, if I'm talking to you, I'm thinking, I got to be through at 2 o'clock or 3 o'clock or whatever it is. I says, or I may be looking at you thinking about what do you want? What's your agenda? It was really sad. It really sad. And God just pierced me right at that moment. And so forth. You know, and as a cashier, we talked about, hey, that means you can't be talking to the bag boy about the football game on Friday night when you're waiting to the customer. In fact, our standard of love says you can't even be thinking about the football game. Okay, that's what undivided attention. Now, I will tell you that we have a whole list of things about what love looks like in a grocery store. Undivided attention was the one thing that changed my life. And so I began to practice undivided attention because it is a learned skill for me. It does not come natural. Okay. And so, you know, when I listen to my wife, okay, for the thing that I've already heard six times, okay, and I'm hearing it for the seventh time, and I've got to give undivided attention, that's a learned skill for me, okay? And so, you know, but after that meeting, I started practicing, and later, I'd been married over 25 years then. About 4 months later, my wife told me, she says, you know, Matt, I have never felt as loved by you as I do now. And that was primarily, almost exclusively because of undivided attention, you know? And it used to have a common practice, and I still occasionally do, where God would get me up at 3 o'clock in the morning, okay? Stir you, and you're like, okay, God, what's the matter? Is something the matter? Is something wrong? Do I need to pray for somebody? That type of thing. And it would kind of always happen about 3 o'clock, that type of thing. I remember complaining to God one time. I said, God, why do you always get me up at 3 o'clock? He said, well, I got your attention then. And so, which, you know, it was kind of piercing. That means all during the day you don't have my attention because I'm not paying attention. So I have to get you up in the middle of the night. And I thought, okay, well, maybe if I pay attention during the day, you won't have to get me up in the middle of the night. Okay. So this morning, this one time, it was long when I was practicing undivided attention. I got up, got startled at 3 o'clock. I thought, okay, is something wrong? Something happened to somebody? Do I need to pray for someone? And I'm like, okay, God, what do I need to do? And God says, nothing. I said, wait a minute. He says, I just want you to know that you have my undivided attention. So I really don't even know in the natural how that works. I know there's 7.2 billion people. I don't know how it gives me the undivided attention, but I know in my heart that it would be true. Okay. And so, you know, and I thought, that changed my life. It changed my life for my people, my staff, to grow. Some things about our love is that, our love has to be volitional. Volitional love means we do it of our own volition. We choose to, not because we feel like it, because we don't always feel like it, okay? There's some other things is that our love has no respecter of person. It doesn't matter what their background or anything, that type of thing. Even if they're a thief, we're going to handle it with love. Doesn't mean we're not going to hold them accountable, but we're not going to tell them how lazy they are, how they need to get a job, and how they're no good for nothing. We're not going to hit them. We're not going to do any of that thing. We're going to treat them with love. Okay, and that's primarily who we are. Is the love that we're trying to preach and implement and that we're working and that type of thing, got 1,800 people. Are all 1,800 on board? No. Don't think so. Hope so, but don't think so. Is there more on board now than when we started? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you can see that people's lives change. I can see people talking in the language because we don't really have to have a whole lot of rules. We're just like, does your behavior exhibit love? You know, if we have conflict, does it, you know, do you have to act this way? You know, how are you going to act to your grandmother and your best friend? It's going to be two different ways, but they both demonstrate love. And so if we're going to fail, we might not reach it. But if we're going to fail, we're going to fail forward. You know what I'm saying? We're going to make progress. It might not be where you'd hoped or dreamed it might be, but we're going to fall forward. We're going to be better than what we were. Now, not everybody on my staff, sometimes my staff grows a little frustrated because they're like, man, we're just not there. But I'm like, you don't see it, man. We're getting better. It's starting to filter through those type of things. Some of the things that I'm always more concerned about where we're going than where we are. Okay, and Chris is not here, is he? Well, Chris had a very impactful thing on mine. He doesn't even realize it. I was here at church one time, and it impacted me. Was that he said in when we were doing the relationship, building relationships thing, he said on the things, he says, the only thing that we're going to take with us is the relationships. And that pierced me. It might not pierce anybody, but it pierced me. And I thought to myself, you know, see, our business is about building relationships, because that's any money. We're not going to do any of that thing. So the most important thing that we can do and teach our people to do is to build relationships. And I tell my people, I says, I know that some of you are just going to be with us for a season, 1 year, 2 year, 5 year. I says, but my prayer for you is that when you leave our company and someone asks you what was the one most important thing that you learned, I hope it's not I learned how to run a cash register, or wrap meat, or stock shelves. My hope and prayer for you is that I learned the importance of love. Okay. Because if we do that, we continue to impact the world. Yes, sir?
We have 5 minutes
left. Okay. So you want to ask a question?
Yeah, I want to ask a question.
No good. Yes, we have gone to Walmart. Walmart ended up closing the stores across from us, and yeah, so that, yeah, I had some people from out in the other areas to call me and wanted to know, and I before they come, I says, are you sure? He says, yeah, and he asked me questions, and he says, well, what did you do differently advertising? I says, nothing. He said, what about pricing? What did you do pricing-wise? I said, we had four items we changed. He says, four items? Now, we carry 30,000, 40,000 items. He says, you changed four items? I said, yeah, we changed four items, because there were four items in a Walmart Express that were cheaper than a regular Walmart. I said, there was four items we changed. He says, well, what did you change about your facilities? I said, we didn't change anything. He said, well, how do you explain that they didn't have very little effect on you? And I says, it was love. I says, we love well there. I says, and that was it. I says, and that was the reason. So it was God's deal. It's God's deal.
So basically, your father, mm-hmm. you captured the culture of your father. You represented
it in your culture. Right. You know, I remember when God first started impressing love upon me, I was like, you know, God, I wonder how love makes money. Okay, but I don't care. Okay.
How you doing on your progress towards your goal?
Yeah, I was looking at it. I have a board up in my office because in 1996 we were at 42 million, and you know I'm guessing this year that we'll probably push 240 or 250 million. So. I still got a ways to go. I guess I still got a job for a while. So I don't, you know, I've told Michael, I says, you know, God has already pointed out to me in our company who's next. And this person's about my age. And I'm like, you know, I told Michael, I says, you know, I don't know, you know, I don't know what happens, you know, next, but I don't care. It doesn't matter, you know.
Does anybody have a question?
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. And God went behind the scenes and spoke to that person.
Right.
Do you have any examples where that may have not been the case and you had to make that hard decision
because God prompted that decision about my CFO was not where I was really seeking his confirmation, God's direction about that. I think that was just God's way of giving me even more peace about it. You know, I was just letting the bankers know to say, hey, if y'all going to have an issue, I want to work through it now. They took it that I was asking for permission. I really was just asking them, is this going to be a problem? Not because I'm not going to do it if it's a problem, but I've got to figure out how to handle it if it's a problem. So, yes, there was somebody else. Yeah. I have in the past. I don't struggle as much now because I recognize now that God knows my heart. and that even if I make the wrong decision, he will actually turn it for good, because he knows, you know, he knows my heart. He trusts my heart. So he knows I would not try to do the wrong thing or that type of thing. And so, and there's something I learned about from God as well, is that there's sometimes he doesn't care. Okay. And so, and, you know, I say a lot of times I don't care, but I kind of learned that from God, is that he doesn't care. Because, you know, when I think about my children, if my grandson or my son was to get up and he had a pair of blue tennis shoes or white tennis shoes, that type of thing, and he was asking me, "Daddy, which one of them pair of shoes you want?" I don't care. Well, some of the things that I think are big and important and that type of things, I don't believe God cares. You know what I'm saying? Hey, man, what you want to do? What you want to do? That type of thing. So I just, you know, going to say, hey, you know, if I need to back up, speak to me or speak to someone else so that I can begin to, you know, ponder where this is right or not. And so, you know, and not all the decisions I've made have been, not all of them have been right. There's been decisions, I won't say they haven't been right. All of the decisions have not been successful as the way the world would view it. Not everything has worked out. I've closed stores where you'd think, well, that must have been a bad decision. Well, we actually learned some stuff in that thing, so hopefully we don't repeat it. So, you know, I'm okay. I'm saying, oh, God, it's all good.
So let's give a round of applause.
Okay.
So every Christmas, he does a big Christmas party, brings all the employees in, preaches the gospel, takes some of our follow-up CDs and does follow up with them. So for a guy that doesn't like public speaking, you do okay. You do okay. All right, listen, you got your group, and so go to that space. I don't really know where they are, so we'll figure it out. There's Caitlin. Caitlin, can you help us?